If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the 1-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Primary results in Florida and Arizona set up key November election contests. We'll tell you what the results mean for two key statehouse races and the battle for the U.S. Senate. Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal, and I am here, as I so often am, and happy to be so, with Kim Strassel. How are you, Kim?
Hello, Paul.
And Bill McGurn. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Paul.
So let's talk about the results in Florida from Tuesday and Arizona. Two very important states, not just for the control of the Senate at stake, but also for the fate of the country. They're enormously important states, changing in interesting ways, growing states. So they are, I think, more interesting than some other primaries we've seen. Let's start with Florida, and that, of course, is a competitive state, as is Arizona. And there you had really one of the biggest upsets on the Democratic side in this whole primary season, Kim. You have Andrew Gillum, the mayor of Tallahassee, up in the Panhandle, defeat the longtime favorite, a member of Congress in the past, Gwen Graham, who was the favorite, 34% to 31.5%, to take the Democratic nomination. Gillum was supported by Bernie Sanders. He is in favor of a single payer health care, and is a decided progressive. What do we make of that?
Yeah, a huge surprise. This was someone that Bernie Sanders had backed. I think it's notable because Bernie Sanders has been crisscrossing the country and endorsing a lot of different candidates. He hasn't necessarily had a lot of wins this primary season, but this is a big one, beating Gwen Graham. She was, of course, the daughter of former Senator Bob Graham, so very well known in the state. He only barely eked out a victory. He didn't have a lot of money, but I think one thing that helped push him over at the end is that the progressive movement really did rally around him. He got a big cash infusion at the very end from some other notable progressives, Tom Steyer, the environmentalist, and George Soros, who needs no introduction. But it's going to set up a really vivid contrast for this fall because, as you say, he is a committed progressive, Medicare for all, $15 an hour wages, and he's running against the Republican nominee, Ron DeSantis, who's very much an ally of President Trump, a fairly conservative Republican, Iraq war veteran, Harvard educated, and they're going to go face to face, and we'll see how Bernie Sanders' views actually test out in a bigger statewide race.
DeSantis cuts an interesting political figure. He was going to run for Senate before Marco Rubio decided to get back in the race and run for re-election in 2016. He's a member of Congress, but as you say, Harvard educated. He's not a Yahoo. He served in the military. He's a very well-spoken, articulate fellow. But he has identified himself with Trump during this primary campaign, did so, got the full-throated endorsement of the president to defeat Adam Putnam, who is a former member of Congress and now has been agriculture secretary in Florida, and a kind of protege of former Governor Jeb Bush, but had been critical of Trump. And so Trump went with DeSantis, and that seems to be making a big – that obviously was a huge factor here, Bill.
Yeah, it was a tremendous factor. I also think that in addition to being pro-Donald Trump, there were two other factors. He was on Fox an awful lot. Like, he was way – his victory was kind of an incredible victory because I think 2 months ago he was down 15 points.
He won 56%, Bill, with 37.
Right. So he's on Fox a lot. I'd say unlike a lot of – I mean, this may be slightly unfair, but unlike a lot of other Trump supporters, his tone is more calming. And as you say, he's a Harvard Law graduate. He's not – yelling. He seems very reasonable on TV. He also showed a sense of humor in his in his ads. He has a build the wall thing, but with his kid and so forth. I'm not sure. I mean, what this shows, it's obviously a going to be in part a referendum on Donald Trump. But it also shows on the Democratic side where the enthusiasm is, you know, with Bernie. You know, we get these talks about Connor Lamb and the new moderate face, but that's not where the enthusiasm is. So it'll be an interesting showdown.
Well, I was looking at the results, Kim, and fascinating in Florida. You know, if you're the mayor of Tallahassee, that's up north. And Graham, nonetheless, didn't do nearly as well as she thought in Broward or Miami-Dade counties, which are in the south. And I think that is was a tactical mistake on her part because she didn't spend a lot of money down there for that was one mistake. But Bill's point about the enthusiasm, I think, is the right one. And you know, you have to say, I guess that DeSantis is probably the favorite right now because Florida there'll be a huge anti-Trump campaign on the part of the Democrats. I think Gillum is fit for impeachment, if I'm not mistaken, even though he wouldn't get the vote on it in Florida as governor. But the Florida's one of Trump's better states. His approval rating has held up there better than it has in some others.
Well, and that shows in the numbers from yesterday. You were talking about the numbers internally and what ultimately did Graham in. But if you look at the overall state, there's a bit of a warning here, I think, for Democrats. There were 1.6 million Republicans who turned out in the GOP primary, and there was 1.5 million Democrats who did. And while Gillum got about DeSantis got 914,000 votes, and Gillum got about 400,000 fewer. Now, we'll see if Democrats rally around him and if he has any ability to bring along independents, moderates, people who are undecided about President Trump. But I think this is actually maybe a little bit of a harder race for Democrats than some of the enthusiasm out there is suggesting, because he is a candidate with ideas that are not necessarily mainstream. And this, as you said, is a state that did go for Trump and that seems to be pretty excited about a DeSantis candidacy.
Let's talk briefly before we turn to Arizona about the Senate race that's being set up in Florida. Rick Scott, the current governor running for Senate, two-term governor, highly popular after winning two very narrow elections. He's now in the upper 50s running for election to the Senate. And he'll be running against Bill Nelson, the current senator, Democrat, longtime Democratic senator there. Scott is ahead narrowly, but he's ahead in the polls. And that, I think, is bringing some discomfort to a lot of Democrats who are counting on Nelson to hold that seat. And this is one that would be a net pickup for the Republicans in the closely fought Senate campaign, Bill.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting. I don't think at the start of this people thought Bill Nelson was as vulnerable.
I sure didn't.
And the Republican enthusiasm seems to be longer. So I agree on that. I just also point out one congressional race there, Donna Shalala in the 27th. I think it's 27th District of Florida. That's an open seat because Ileana Ros-Lehtinen is leaving. She's Republican, but I believe Mrs. Clinton carried that by 20 points or something.
Big Democrat.
So that's going to be an interesting one. Yeah. The Republicans are running a Latino, Maria Elvira Salazar, in that race. So that's going to be one that's watched as well against Donna Shalala, a well-known person, recently a university president, but a Clinton cabinet member.
She was a Health and Human Services Secretary under Bill Clinton, and she has been the University of Miami president. So she is well known down there, but it'll be fascinating to see how that plays with the Hispanic Republican running in that heavily Cuban district.
Right.
Well, we're talking about the primary results and their impact on the November election, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Drive time, gym time, anytime. WSJ Podcasts. From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, This is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Kim Strassel and Bill McGurn. Let's turn to Arizona. Again, fascinating results in the Senate campaign. Let's focus on that first. Martha McSally, former Air Force pilot, won comfortably over two Republican candidates from the populist right, Joe Arpaio, the former sheriff of Maricopa County, and Kelly Ward, the candidate who ran and got 40% of the vote against John McCain in a primary. Donald Trump did not play in this primary. He stayed out of it, didn't endorse any of the candidates. McSally was a member of Congress and was the clear favorite of the Republican Party in Washington, the Senatorial Campaign Committee, however. And Kelly Ward and Joe Arpaio both ran ads, I think, if I'm not mistaken, touting what the nice things that Trump had said about them. Of course, Trump had pardoned Arpaio. But McSally here winning the last I looked, she was above 50%, not all precincts reporting, but above 50%. Kim, that's a big win for McSally.
Yeah, and in contrast to Florida, this was a very different race, whereas you now have this very big study in contrast in Florida. What was notable about both candidates who won on the Republican and the Democratic side is they were both the candidates that wanted to be seen a little bit more as centrist and moderate. Kelly Ward and Joe Arpaio, I saw one person say, noted that they were immigration hardliners and they were sort of Trump before Trump, which is true, and they very much ran on that. And in the end, McSally, while she did move a little bit to the right on some issues, she was in fact criticized for it on particular immigration and the border. She very much continued to present herself more as a kind of centrist acceptable candidate. Kyrsten Sinema, who won on the Democratic side, the same thing. She has more of a progressive past, but has very notably tried to position herself in this race as a centrist. She's running as an independent. She claims she's, you know, not really allied with either party. And she was running against another progressive, Deidre Abboud. And she took that victory as well, too. So not quite the fireworks and the study in contrast here, but also setting up a very big race because this is, you know, the Senator Jeff Flake's seat. He is retiring. A lot of people have worried that Republicans could lose this, but I think they got a good opportunity in McSally.
They do have the best candidate they could have marshaled here, but I think this is going to be a very tough race because Democrats are going to pour money into it. This is the state that where teachers struck and got went on strike and got a 20% raise. The progressive left thinks they have an opportunity here with a changing demographics in Arizona. It wasn't one of Trump's best states. He only won there narrowly, I think, by 3 points. So it is going to be a very hard-fought race. And if they lose that seat, Republicans lose that seat, then that is that much closer to losing control of the Senate, Bill. Let's turn to the governor's race. We have Doug Ducey, the incumbent, seeking re-election after a single term. And he'll be challenged by David Garcia, who is an Arizona State professor and an expert in education. Garcia is trying to ride that wave that was established by the unions with the teacher strike and pay raise. There are also a couple of big ballot measures in Arizona that the national left, are pushing, doubling the top tax rate on anyone making more than $250,000 to 9% to McGurn-like levels in New Jersey, and also stripping out another referendum that would kill an education choice program. So this is going to be a big right-left showdown in Arizona this year.
Yeah, and I think in that race, I believe that Doug Garcia is also a military veteran.
So he is. He's an Army veteran.
Another veteran, which the Democrats, I think, have cleverly used. One last thought on the McSally race. Not only did she win against Kelly Ward and Sheriff Arpaio, I think that if you add the vote totals up, she had more votes than both of them combined. I mean, that's a pretty strong win going in. The interesting thing is that both she and her rival, Kyrsten Sinema, are giving up seats in the House that make those open and vulnerable. So it's going to be very, very interesting. You know, one is, again, the Republicans are running a Latina, Leah Marquez Peterson, against a Democrat former Representative Ann Kirkpatrick. So it's, you know, it's kind of one of these musical chairs you set up here. You catch one, but you make the other seats vulnerable. So.
Well, yeah, and I think, Kim, this is maybe a bellwether state this year and may determine a lot more than just the results in Arizona, in the sense that it is such a closely fought state that if there's going to be a Democratic wave, this is one of those states where they could really sweep everything, but win the open House seats, win the Senate, take back the governorship, and if that happens, of course, they'll also pick up a lot of seats in the state assembly and Senate.
Absolutely. And if you look at the outside groups, they're clearly looking at this as well, too, the bellwether state. You know, if you look at that McSally Sinema race so far, there's already been $8 million spent on it in ads and promotions for the different candidates. So it's a very big deal. And then you add in there the seats that Bill is talking about, which will be closely fought, but also the governor's race, where you have Doug Ducey, who is running again. He is running very much on his economic results in the state, but he is hampered by this education issue that you mentioned. There was an enormous teacher walkout, what's known as the Red for Ed movement there. He ended up giving a pay raise. He's tried to suggest that those that were part of that movement and oppose him want to take over the governor's mansion so they can reimpose higher income taxes, and that has certainly been something that others have been talking about. David Garcia is running on refunding education. As he said, he is an educator as well as an Army veteran. And so they've got a strong candidate there. And in this wider race, which haven't got as much attention for the state houses and governors, remember, Republicans have had a very good run, but Democrats are hoping with this election to change that and to put a number of these states back into blue hands.
Well, the tax increase referendum on the ballot, which Ducey is opposing, I don't know if Garcia has endorsed it yet, but it's going to be interesting to see how that plays, because you're talking about an enormous increase in tax rates, doubling the top tax rate, and not at a very high level of income. $250,000 is not that much when you think about that kind of income, that kind of tax rate. What that does, and at a lower level, it raises it to 8 percentage points of income. That means you're going to put Arizona in the area of New Jersey, New York, not quite to California levels, where at the top rate is above 13%, but still very high. And of course, so many of the people who have moved to Arizona have moved from California, have moved from high tax states in the Midwest. So they retire there, and it's going to be fascinating to see how that referendum affects the ultimate race, if it drives turnout that helps Ducey.
Yeah, and Paul, I think you put your finger on one other factor in this. It's very tempting for those of us watching in the press corps to try to find a simple template for all these elections around the states, right? And one of them is a generic ballot and so forth. But when you get down to it, there are so many different issues. There are different states, whether they're a Trump state or a Hillary state, and the candidates have to run different campaigns. Basically, at the end of the day, local issues do matter to local people. Donald Trump's going to be a factor in all of it, but it's just there's going to be no simple formula. It looks like what we're going to have in November is a night with a lot of interesting outcomes and surprises, and maybe no single discernible pattern.
Well, and in the Senate race, Kim, just I know you want to get in here and I want to get you in here, but just one quick point. If McSally manages to hold that Arizona seat, and if Rick Scott holds his lead and picks up the seat in Florida, very hard to see the Democrats gaining control of the Senate, given the other races that are up.
Correct. And that's why one of the reasons why people are spending so much time and money on these races, because they are linchpins to those Democratic ambitions. I was only just going to add that I've spoken to a couple of Republicans this morning, and, you know, not only were they happy with the candidates they've come up with in these races, but for those that were watching closely, the biggest news, though it's not getting much attention, I mentioned those Florida turnout numbers. Republicans had higher turnout than Democrats did in the Arizona race as well, too. And this has been a little encouraging to some Republicans that are very worried about these midterms, because it's a hopeful sign to them that maybe as summer is getting over, their voters are maybe tuning in a little bit and recognizing, they hope, some of the stakes here, especially on the economy, et cetera.
Yeah, interesting, because, of course, that is the opposite of the trend we saw in the upper Midwest states, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan, in primaries not too many weeks ago. All right. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Kim. It's going to be a rip-roaring fall election campaign. That's all I can say. We hope you'll stick with us for those races and those shows on Potomac Watch. Thanks for listening.